Want applications that can live on-premises or in the cloud? Bring the flexibility of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TechNet Radio, Building Your Hybrid Cloud with System Center, Virtual Machine Manager 2012 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2 and Hyper-V, and the Windows Azure Pack. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft in the United States for cloud and enterprise solutions. And I'm joined again by our good friend, Andy Serwich. Hey, Andy, how's it going today?
Good. How you doing, Keith?
Great. Thanks for joining.
Hey, no worries. Appreciate doing it.
Sure thing. Hey, Andy, before we get started, do you want to just take a few moments to give everyone that's listening in today a brief introduction to yourself and your background in virtualization and cloud technologies?
Sure. And again, my name is Andy Serwich. I'm a virtual systems administrator for the Trivalent Group. Trivalent Group is a services provider in the western South Michigan area that primarily specializes in solutions and products that help customers manage, access, protect, and store their data. And kind of what I do for them on a daily basis is, you know, I'm working with hypervisors all day, every day. You know, Hyper-V, VMware. We're starting to get more into the Hyper-V space, kind of looking at the Azure Pack as, you know, kind of like a self-help type of solution for our customers. You know, ease of use is kind of the phrase of the day. If we can help enable customers, at least from our perspective, enable customers to kind of, you know, make tweaks and changes to their own environments, you know, it gives us additional time back to support things that need supporting, right? So that's, you know, it's kind of where we're testing some things right now from that point of view.
Oh, okay, great. So the self-service aspects of our technologies like the Azure Pack sound like they're really attractive. And I imagine that for the customers that you're piloting with, they have kind of a renewed sense of agility to some degree as well, because it puts them a little bit more in direct control of their virtualized environment that you're hosting for them, and at the same time gives them a pretty consistent interface with our public Microsoft Azure platform for perhaps other properties that they're bursting out to that public cloud. Is that right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the problem from a service provider perspective, when you onboard a customer and you're in charge of all their IT, that works for your smaller customers. I don't want to bother with an IT staff, right? But for some of the larger customers where they still have maybe an on-premise IT person, or maybe they have an on-premise IT team, for them to hand over the, you know, all the reins of their IT infrastructure to a service provider, at least for me, if I was in their shoes, I would kind of have a problem with that. To be able to have control of your own destiny, at least to a degree, I think really helps with the comfort level and in the trust of the service provider as well.
Yeah, definitely. I can really see that. And in addition to situations, scenarios like yours as a hosting provider, I also talk to IT pros at large internal enterprise shops, and they're really excited because the Azure Pack for like their dev and test teams within their organization where they're constantly trying to spin up new VMs or spin down other VMs, the Azure Pack, even internally for them, has given them the ability to offload a lot of that basic stuff to their dev and test teams. And then again, from their standpoint, their private cloud then has the same provisioning and management user interface that they might use for hosted workloads with organizations like your own, and also workloads that are sitting up in the public cloud with our Microsoft Azure platform. So it's generated a lot of excitement.
Yeah, single pane of glass for all your IT needs, right? That's definitely the way the industry is going.
Yeah, to be sure. And so let's see, we're in episode 10 of our Build Your Hybrid Cloud series. I can't believe we're already in episode 10. In episode 9, our last episode, you and I had walked through the basic provision of the Azure Pack in an on-premises environment to give that self-service control, that multi-tenant web-based capability that we've been talking about. to a private cloud or a hosted cloud environment that's leveraging System Center 2012 R2 Virtual Machine Manager as sort of a private cloud fabric manager from that standpoint, with the Azure Pack providing that self-service web interface on top of it.
Right.
And I think we left off in episode 9 with the basic functioning of our Azure Pack environment up and running.
Yep.
And this episode, we're going to start extending that. And what are some of the areas that you've seen from an extension standpoint provide real value in the Azure Pack beyond just the basic web-based self-service management? Are there other add-on pieces that you've done next when you've been piloting it, Andy?
Well, I think from a just from a general use point of view, I mean, once you set up like a virtual machine, you got to connect to it to manage it, right?
You know?
So maybe we can kind of cover that aspect of it, just so people kind of know how that's kind of set up and how that works.
Yeah, definitely. The remote console connectivity aspect is what you're referencing, sure. And definitely, and the ability to have these multi-tenant environments with potentially VMs and isolated networks that are virtualized from one another kind of presents some challenges with traditional remote desktop, because in some cases you may not have direct network access into those VMs. And so The exciting thing about the Azure Pack is it leverages some of our remote desktop functionality, specifically the remote desktop gateway, to provide a secure connection, even for customers that are coming into the environment from over a public internet connection, provide a secure SSL encrypted tunnel into the environment, and then through the Azure portal, be able to use RDP as through that gateway as a way of landing directly through the host's VM bus with a console connection into individual VMs that they need to access. So from that standpoint, even if they don't have direct network access to the VMs themselves, as long as they're an authorized user for being able to manage those VMs, they can use the gateway functionality to gateway in through the host into that VM through the host's hypervisor console support for virtual machines. Seems like that, from what I've heard, that's reduced the complexity of managing remote console connections quite a bit. What do you think, Andy? Is that you? Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I was pretty much going to say something along those lines. I mean, the fact is, in the old days, you used to have to be generally on the same LAN segment or a LAN segment that had some sort of route back to the LAN segment that your host was on, right? But kind of taking the complexity out of that, and it's really enabled this manage it from wherever you are type of situation. Again, Microsoft is really enabling ease of use with their product solutions.
Yeah, definitely. That's great. Well, how about we drop over into our lab and we take a look at configuring the remote console support in the Azure Pack together? Does that sound like a good next step, Andy?
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, Andy, so here we are over in our lab, and before we jump into configuring the remote desktop console connection capabilities of the Azure Pack with everybody, because there's a few components, I thought it might make some sense to review those components with everybody up on the whiteboard. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here. The front-end portal is really simple in that it enables all that functionality for you, but, you know, there are a lot of moving parts in the background here, so I think it does make sense to go through those.
Okay, great. Yeah, and so in our last episode, when we built out the base Azure Pack environment, we were basically building out the environment from the standpoint of this top row here, where we have Virtual Machine Manager managing our hosts, over to Service Provider Foundation providing a consistent API on top of our Virtual Machine Manager, Fabric Manager, and the Windows Azure portal as our web-based portal for allowing that multi-user, multi-tenant self-service access to customers or individual tenant administrators for managing and provisioning new VMs. And so the way that this architecture would work from a remote console standpoint is when the tenant is sitting at their browser, browsing into the Azure Pack tenant portal, from the tenant portal, they would click on one of their virtual machines and attempt to establish a remote console connection. What that's going to do is the portal is going to deliver to them an RDP file, much like the Microsoft Azure public cloud portal delivers for users that are using our public cloud today. when that browser user opens that RDP file, the RDP file will launch the remote desktop client on their local side, and the remote desktop client will read that RDP file for configuration information. And part of that config information is going to point the client through an SSL connection to the remote desktop gateway, which is acting as sort of a proxy of sorts, proxying the SSL connection in from the internet over into the environment. And so this remote desktop gateway, it has some authentication paths that have to be set up because it's the point of access for your remote client. So the remote client's going to authenticate to that remote desktop gateway initially through that SSL connection. And to allow that authentication to pass through to the underlying Hyper-V host, the remote desktop gateway works with Virtual Machine Manager to provision a set of tokens that are used to authorize that connection, that console connection, to a particular VM on a particular virtualization host inside the environment. And so the connection over for between our remote desktop gateway and Virtual Machine Manager is used to exchange those tokens. And because the Hyper-V hosts also trust Virtual Machine Manager issued tokens, it allows remote desktop gateway to establish its connection securely in an authenticated manner, multi-tenant manner, to the Hyper-V host. So it's the good news is, although we've got all these components operating in the environment, the operation and use of it is really, really quick. However, there are some security components that need to be set up for all of this to take place. First, on Virtual Machine Manager, Virtual Machine Manager needs to have a certificate provision that's going to be trusted by the Hyper-V hosts and by the remote desktop gateway. And that certificate's used for authorizing the tokens that are used for authenticating back and forth between the remote desktop gateway and the Hyper-V hosts. That certificate needs to be installed on the Virtual Machine Manager server, and then when we push that out through Virtual Machine Manager, it'll install the public keys of that certificate on each of our Hyper-V hosts so that they trust that same certificate path. We'll also want to put the public keys for that certificate on the remote desktop gateway box. So there's a little bit of internal certificate work, but then there's also an external certificate that the remote desktop gateway would use for securing that internal, that inbound web connection, the initial connection between the client and the remote desktop gateway box. And that's just the normal SSL certificate, because through the firewall, that traffic is just seen as firewall-friendly web SSL traffic that happens to be delivering a remote desktop payload inside of that SSL tunnel, essentially. So a couple certificates to configure, a couple components to set up. Once it's all set up and going, though, it's a really easy experience for the user to manage and remote console to their VMs. Well, Andy, does that make sense from your standpoint?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I like that there's only a couple of direct routes in and out of the architecture here. One key thing that I always like to mention with when you're dealing with SSL certificates, I find all too often that people, they like to go the cheaper route, and you know, if they're not using some sort of internal CA, they like to go the cheaper route and maybe buy the certificate from GoDaddy for maybe a year. Well, they get into the routine of using the product. A year goes by, they don't know, and boom, their certificate expires, and then everything's broken, right? Right. So I at least to our customers, I always try to recommend that they buy a minimum 3-year cert, just so you don't run into that issue unexpectedly, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it gives you that additional leeway where even though you might be renewing the cert on a year-and-a-half basis or every 2-year basis, gives you a little bit of extra time to play with so that you're not forced into a hard situation. Yeah, it's a really, really good point. Yep. Well, why don't we go through the process of configuring each of these components? So first we'll start with the Virtual Machine Manager server, and we'll get the certificate set up on it and tell VMM to push those out to the Hyper-V hosts. And then we'll go over to our remote desktop gateway, and we'll configure it. We'll install the remote desktop gateway components. There's a little authentication component that it needs to exchange trusted token information with the VMM server, and we'll get its certificates up and running. Sound good?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to switch over into one of our live lab environments then, so we can take a look at that together. And should be coming up on your screen. You should be able to see it.
Yep.
Great. Well, it's so we're on our one of our VMM fabric managers, one of our virtual machine manager consoles, and this is the place that we would normally want to start. Now, for the certificates that you had mentioned, we've got a couple choices when we're thinking about provisioning these certificates. You had mentioned one choice of using a public CA. If you're provisioning these certificates just in a lab environment, you can also use self-signed certificates and use tools like our free MakeCert tool that's included in the software development kits for Windows 7 and Windows 8. Download it from the download center and use that. But those self-signed certificates, while they're okay in a lab environment just to test the basic functioning, because they're self-signed, there's really no trusted certificate path. So I'd encourage you to make sure you're using true certificates that are certified by a CA, either an internal CA or a public CA, as you start moving into an environment where you're exposing Windows Azure Pack to real users, customers, or tenants, because then you have a true certification trusted path. Now, in our lab environment, we're using an internal CA. We're using an enterprise CA that's running on our Active Directory domain controllers, and it's integrated with Active Directory. And Active Directory certificate services have been around for a while. I know internal CAs sometimes, and PKI architecture sometimes scare IT pros when I talk to them. But with Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2, it's really easy to set up that internal CA. So before we do too much with Virtual Machine Manager itself, I'm just going to drop out of Virtual Machine Manager for a moment here in our lab, and I'm going to switch over just to give you a little bit of a view into that Active Directory Certificate Services component. So here I am over in our lab on one of our domain controllers running Certificate Services. It's an internal CA. And all I really had to do to set up the basics of Certificate Services is drop over in Server Manager, in our Server Manager tool, on our server console, drop over to the Manage menu, choose Add, Remove Roles and Features, and then step through the process of adding in the Active Directory Certificate Services feature. And as you add that in and install it the first time, it'll ask you what type of CA it is. So I'm using an enterprise CA, and it'll ask you some basic identification questions that are used to name the CA and are used as part of the certification chain for certificates that CA issues. So it's really not too challenging to set up the basics of certificate services. And because it's not that challenging, although you could use self-signed certificates even in a lab environment, I still recommend you go through the process of thinking about maybe setting up a certificate services server in your lab. That way, as you move from lab pilot proof of from lab to proof of concept to pilot to production, you have an environment that's more consistent throughout all of those stages. Now, for the certificate that we need to issue for our virtual machine manager server that it's going to use for issuing authentication tokens, there's some special properties that need to be set up on those certificates. It has to be set up for providing certificates that can be used for digital signatures and encryption, and it has to support SHA-256-bit hashes. So what you'll find is that when you initially install Active Directory Certificate Services, some of the base certificate templates aren't set up to support a cryptographic security provider that will support SHA-256. So what I did after I got Certificate Services up and running is in Server Manager, you'll see that now that the server is running Certificate Services, we've got a new property page here. All I did is I dropped into my Certificate Authority tool by right-clicking on my server and choosing Certificate Authority. And that's going to open up my CA console, my MMC management console for my Certificate Authority. And I've actually already got that open here. It had it minimized on the bottom, so I'll just maximize that. And as I expand out my CA, you'll see certificate templates, and you'll have a base set of certificate templates that are already authorized. Well, what I did is I created a new certificate template called the Remote Console Connection Template that has all of the required properties for issuing certificates for VMM to use for token signing. It has all the required properties inside of it. To create that new certificate template, All I did is I managed my existing certificate templates, and I picked an existing certificate template, like Smart Card Logon, for instance, to duplicate that, and then change the use it to basically clone that template, create a new template, and change the required properties. When we drill into the properties of our remote console connection template, you'll see that some of the properties that I needed to change when I cloned that base template for VMM's new certificates is over on the cryptography tab. I had to make sure that I was supporting a 2048-bit key size, that for cryptographic providers, I was using the Microsoft Enhanced RSA, an AES cryptographic provider, because that provides SHA-256-bit encryption. And under subject name, that I'm allowing the subject name to be supplied in the certificate request. It's not a normal certificate that would typically be tied to a particular DNS name, like a web server certificate is, for instance. So once I've got my certificate template cloned as a new template with the required properties, all I do is go back over to my certificate templates folder in my CA management tool and select new certificate template to issue and pick the template, the new template that I had set up, and click OK. Once I've done that, it'll appear as a template that administrators can use for being able to issue and enroll new certificates. And if we go into the properties of it, you can confirm all of the properties that were brought over as part of that template. So once that template's set up, now we're ready to issue the certificates. But before I go further, Andy, did you have any additional points or questions that you thought were relevant at this point for building that base template?
No, I think that's pretty, it's pretty straightforward these days. I remember days gone past where this stuff was really difficult. You know, like you were saying earlier, IT pros kind of saw, you know, the CA role installed, and you know, their head starts to spin. But Microsoft done a really good job of making this a much easier to use interface, and just the general concept of setting up an internal CA is much easier. And you were kind of recommending earlier that you set up a CA in your lab, and I would like to make the point that in your lab, this isn't going to be the only product you ever demo or set up a pilot for that's going to require a CA. Right. So if you just set up a CA, it's going to save you time in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. There's with I think particularly with security moving from an internal perimeter-based concern of a lot of organizations to something that is perimeterless, boundaryless, mm-hmm. and security is now being applied to mobile devices, mobile repositories, cloud applications, and whatnot. You're going to see more and more application needs for certificates for properly securing those applications in the new mobile-first, cloud-first world. So that's a good point. Yeah, you might as well bite the bullet once, set up your CA, and then it becomes another infrastructure component that you can use in your environment for securing additional applications as well.
Yep.
Great point. So we've done our certificate authority work. So I'm just going to drop back over to our VMM server because we have that certificate that we need to issue for VMM to be able to do token signing. And so over at our VMM server, we could request that new certificate from our CA based on this new template in a couple different ways. We could drop into our MMC console and use the certificate snap-in to request a new certificate, specify all the properties. So I'm in my MMC console. I could just add in my certificate snap-in, click add, specify that I wanted to manage certificates for my local computer account, finish that up. And then as I'm using this MMC snap-in, I could just right-click on my personal certificate store and request a new certificate and step through the process of manually supplying all the information that I would need for requesting that new certificate. So that's certainly one way of being able to do that. However, I like to standardize all this stuff because if I found out one thing over and over again over the years, you set this stuff up once, you're going to set it up on multiple hosts, you're going to have to redo it in your lab environments when you want to go from one version to the next and whatnot of software. So it makes sense to try to standardize as much of this as possible. And so I do a lot of my certificate requests now via PowerShell and certificate templates. So from a command line script standpoint, we mentioned a little earlier, you can certainly use self-signed certificates with MakeCert here's the command line for doing that. Don't normally recommend it, but you can. For generating the certificate request, instead of using the MMC console, we can use the certrec command line tool and basically pass in the required information in a INF file and issue a new certificate request. So we generate a certificate request file. And when we generate that file, let me just go ahead and run that. I have to make sure I'm in the right folder first. So let me change over to the correct folder and we'll rerun that. There we go. It'll create this new certificate request with a .req extension. And before you submit that request, you can actually use certutil to take a look at the certificate request itself. So you can see that if we scroll up here, a couple of the pieces that I wanted to confirm is that we're using SHA-256-bit certificate signatures. So you'll see that as we scroll up under our cryptographic key provider, we're using the enhanced RSA AES cryptographic provider, and under our signature algorithm, we're requesting a certificate that can use SHA-256-bit RSA digital signatures. So that's good. You know, we have a valid certificate request. Then we have to take this request file and submit it to our certificate authority. So we're going to use certrec again. We're going to tell it we want to submit that as a request for our remote console connection template, that new template that we built. And we're going to submit our request file and get back a certificate file that has just the public key information inside of it. So I'll go ahead and run that. I have a couple different CAs in my environment, a lab CA and a production CA. So I'm going to select my lab CA, click OK, and go ahead and create my new certificate file. So I just submitted that, came back and said, here's your public key information on your certificate file. Now I need to take that public key information and accept it and bind it to the private key information that the certificate authority generated for me and store that in my local computer store. So I can do that with the certrec command by accepting that cert file. It'll reach back out to the certificate authority, pull in the private key information, bond it to my public key information, and put that certificate in my local computer personal store. And in fact, once that happens, when we go back into the MMC console, you can actually confirm that it's there. Here's the certificate that I issued when you accepted it, and you can confirm the details of it, that it's a valid certificate, that you have the private key that corresponds to the certificate and whatnot, because it was issued from an internal CA. Once we've done that, we can export out our certificate as a PFX file, because what we'll need to do is we'll need to take that PFX file and send it over to the VMM management server for it to store in an encrypted format in its database so that the VMM management server can use that certificate when it needs to issue the tokens for remote desktop access. So I've got a little bit of PowerShell that we'll use for that. I'll go ahead and grab my PFX file, my exported certificate file that has the public and private key information inside of it. Normally that's password protected, so it's prompting me here for the password to use to get that certificate. And then I can confirm that the certificate has the right cryptographic provider, that it was issued with the right provider and the right intent on that, using this next block of code. And if everything goes well, I won't get any errors back. Great, got nothing back, so that's a good sign. And then I'm ready to take that certificate file now and give it to VMM. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to key in the password once more for my certificate file. So every time you open that certificate file, it needs the password to be able to read the private key information. I'll get the certificate file, that PFX file that I exported, and I'll specify my VMM server. And then I'll run set scvmm server, PowerShell command that's used for configuring VMM. I'll tell it, here's the password that you want to use, VMM server, when you're trying to use this PFX file to generate tokens. I'll pass that in. Here's the certificate file that password unlocks. It has the certificate information in it for issuing the tokens. We're going to connect to our Hyper-V hosts through the gateway using fully qualified domain names. So there is a requirement that your Hyper-V hosts are resolvable through DNS by your gateway machine, your remote desktop gateway machine. And here we've got our VM Connect certificate password. We're using the same password that's going to be on each of our Hyper-V hosts. They're sharing the same certificate. And we're using that same certificate again for our individual Hyper-V hosts as well. We can also specify some other parameters, like how frequently the tokens need to refresh by setting a time to live. We're setting it here to 2 minutes. It could be 1 to 60 minutes. It's more of a background check that after a couple minutes, it's going to go out and issue a new token and refresh the connection, the authentication information for the connection. And then we're specifying our VMM server. So we can run that line. It'll stick the information in the VMM database for it to use. I've already run that line, so I'm not going to run it again here. And then, in order for all of our Hyper-V hosts that VMM is managing to receive this certificate locally with the public key information so that it can trust the tokens that VMM is assigning, we need to do a refresh on each of our Hyper-V hosts. So we could do that refresh in a couple ways. We could go over to our VMM console and go through each of our hosts, right-click, and choose the refresh host option, do a refresh on the host. Or we can do it across all of our hosts in one fell swoop just using PowerShell by running the PowerShell line that I'm highlighting here. Get SCVM host, specify the name of our VMM management server, and then that's going to return back all of the hosts, pipe that into a read SCVM host, and that read SCVM host is going to force the equivalent of doing a host refresh, just as though we had done that individual host refresh in the console. As the VMM management server goes through refreshing each of those hosts, not only is it refreshing the configuration information that it knows about the host, but it'll also use it as an opportunity to say, hey, host, you don't have the certificate that I'm going to be using for the remote console connection capabilities. Here it is. And it'll push the public keys for that certificate into each of the hosts' local personal computer certificate stores automatically. So it's kind of nice. A little bit of upfront work to do from the VMM server, but you could have hundreds of hosts and clusters. And once you do this last line, VMM is going to provision all of those hosts with the required certificate information for you, so you don't have to visit each host on a host-by-host-by-host basis. Well, what do you think, Andy? Does that make sense so far?
PowerShell to the rescue there.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, just real quick, out of curiosity, this is kind of a nice little PowerShell script you got put together here. Is that publicly available for folks to download?
It is, actually. That's a great question. Right at the bottom of our video page, for today's episode, you'll find links to a step-by-step article that will step you through the same process that we're going through together in our episode today, along with the PowerShell scripts, so that you'll be able to replicate this within your own environment pretty easily.
Perfect.
Great. So we're at the point now where we've got our virtual machine manager server set up. So now we need to turn our attention from virtual machine manager over to our remote desktop gateway. So the remote desktop gateway would normally be built as a Windows Server 2012 R2 virtual machine within your virtualized environment that has internet access so that external remote desktop clients can establish that inbound SSL connection through the firewall into the remote desktop gateway box. So what I'm going to do is I've already gone through the process of setting up a new VM running Windows Server 2012 R2. Let me just switch over to that in our lab environment. And we'll go ahead and minimize our virtual machine manager server and switch over to our remote desktop gateway. So far on this remote desktop gateway box, all that's really been done for the base configuration, let me go ahead and minimize some of these windows here, is I installed it as a base Windows Server 2012 R2 host. And then in Server Manager, I joined it to the domain and did the normal settings for making sure I had a valid IP address, making sure the remote desktop and remote management were both enabled, turning on, you know, Windows Update support, getting that configured for however you'd like. So just a really basic installation of our new remote desktop gateway server instance. Everything else, we could do through PowerShell once we've got that base environment set up. We do need to install one additional Windows feature, the remote desktop gateway Windows feature on this base server. That'll be the component that actually provides that proxy support for gatewaying your inbound remote console requests over to the appropriate Hyper-V host. So we could have gone through Server Manager, just like we did on our Active Directory host when we were installing certificate services. We could have gone through Server Manager, gone through the Manage menu, add, remove features and roles, and add just that role in. But it's also really easy to do that stuff with PowerShell using Install Windows Features, using the Install Windows Feature commandlet. So this first commandlet here is just installing the RDS gateway, including the management tools, because we'll need to use that remote desktop management tool in a moment down towards the end of our configuration. Once we do that, I'll go ahead and run this. It might already be installed, but you'll see it'll go through the process of quickly installing the remote desktop gateway components. Once the remote desktop gateway role is installed, the next piece is we need to install a special authentication component that comes with VMM for working with the remote desktop gateway to provide this token-based authentication that's trusted back and forth between the remote desktop gateway VM, the VMM management server, and the Hyper-V hosts. Luckily, that component comes for free with the VMM installation VMM installation bits. So out on the VMM installations ISO image, you can browse out to the AMD64 installation folder, and you'll find an RD gateway fed auth folder. Inside that's an MSI file, and you would just launch that MSI file on your gateway box. It's a really easy, like, 2-minute setup that you would go through. It's literally a next finish type of setup, and it'll install those components. Once, I've already done that, so I'm not going to install the components again. Once those components are installed, then you need to take that public key information for the certificate that we provisioned on our VMM box, and we need to import that into our remote desktop gateway certificate store locally, so that it trusts that same certificate and it'll trust all the tokens that are issued by the VMM server. So we can do that using the MMC console and the certificate snap-in, like we talked about before, or we can use the import certificate PowerShell commandlet, specify the certificate store that we wish to install that new certificate inside, so it'll be the personal store under the local machine, certificate store, and then specify the file path to the exported file that has the public key information inside of it. Once we've done that, the remote desktop gateway will trust that certificate for the tokens that are being issued by the VMM server, and we just need to then configure the remote desktop gateway to tell it that here's the certificate that you should expect to check those tokens against. We do that with a little bit of PowerShell and some WMI magic. So we specify the server name of our remote desktop gateway box. So I have that in a variable. We grab the thumbprint of the public key of our certificate, and I'm putting that in a variable. You can actually, by the way, I don't have it listed here, but let me show you how to grab that thumbprint. For these imported certificates, there's actually a PowerShell provider that allows you to use common aliases in PowerShell, like DIR for generating a directory, and treat that PS provider for your certificate store just like a virtual file system path. So if I do a directory of my local machine certificate store using the path that I imported the certificate inside, you'll see one of the areas that it returns back is the thumbprint for each of the certificates. So all I did is I took that thumbprint, I copied it, and pasted it in as a variable that I'm referencing in the lines below. So a little trick that you can use for easily grabbing the thumbprint of any certificate. So I've got my thumbprint, and then I need to set up a WMI connection to my local computer, my gateway computer, and specifically tell it that I want to be able to establish a connection to the WMI root TS gateway fedauth 2 namespace. So go ahead and do that. Now I've got my open connection, and then I'm going to take that thumbprint and set it to my trusted issuer's certificate property in that namespace area. So we'll go ahead and do that. And then finally, I need to save this. I need to push it back into the server from my PowerShell object variable. So I'm going to do a .put, and that's going to update through WMI this property in my TS Gateway FedAuth providers list as the certificate to expect that all of the secure tokens are being authenticated by. So once I've got through that, last step is pretty easy. I need to generate an SSL web server certificate that the remote desktop gateway will be using for accepting SSL web server requests. And remember when we set up the remote desktop gateway component, we installed the management tools. I need to drop into the management tools. So I'm just going to go into Server Manager over under Remote Desktop Services. Look at my list of servers. I just have one remote desktop gateway server up and running. And when I right-click, I'm going to go into the RD Gateway Manager, find my server, my remote desktop gateway, select Properties, and over on the SSL Certificate tab, I'm going to import the SSL certificate that I had created for use for securing that internet connection from the clients that are trying to establish a remote console connection inbound. So I'll just do that. Go ahead and click cancel. Now my environment's all set up. The last thing I need to do is just tell the Windows Azure Pack portal to use this remote desktop gateway server for remote console connections. And I can do that pretty easily right from the tenant administration portal within the Windows Azure Pack. So I'm just going to minimize my remote desktop gateway here and shoot on over to our Windows Azure Pack environment. So here I've got the tenant admin portal opened, and we're looking at our VM clouds that we set up in our last episode, in episode 9, with a connection to our virtual machine manager management server. And we saw in episode 9 that allowed us to see all the private clouds that VMM was exposing and be able to set up tenant subscription plans and allow tenants to log in and use those resources. If you missed episode 9, go back and take a look at it. It was a great episode for getting the basics of the Windows Azure Pack all up and running.
Sure was.
To tell this cloud provider, to tell the Windows Azure Pack to use our new remote desktop gateway when we're trying to establish remote console connections through this cloud provider, all we have to do is edit that cloud provider properties definition and put in the fully qualified domain name for a remote desktop gateway. So it has to be resolvable by your clients through DNS. We would just plug that in there, and when we go ahead and click OK, that opens up support now for remote console connectivity from your tenants. So when you go down over to your tenant plans, for instance, underneath the plans that you configured, you have the ability under your subscription definition to be able to check a box and allow them to use that remote console connection capability. Once we've got that set up, over on the tenant portal, when a customer or a tenant logs in, they have the ability, I'm logged in here as developer 2 now on the tenant portal, they have the ability to drop into their virtual machines. And for any of the virtual machines that they're managing, now that we've got the console connection capability configured and turned on, when they click on connect, they'll get two options for connecting to the virtual machine. They'll get a desktop option, which uses remote desktop directly into the VM, assuming that the operating system inside the VM has remote desktop turned on as a service, and it's got an IP address that you can route to directly from where you're running the client, from where you're launching the admin portal or the tenant portal. The other option, though, is the new option that we've just configured, the console option. So the console option, that allows me to go through that remote desktop gateway. So even if I'm sitting out on the internet, I can establish a secure SSL connection in through the gateway and allow the gateway to proxy me in to the appropriate virtualization host that's running this VM, even if the VM itself has no direct network access. So if I click on connect here, click on console, you'll see that it'll prompt me and say, hey, you're connecting through the console. The RDP file that it's going to download, be cautious with it, because if you give it to somebody else, it could allow them to have a network path in from a internet connection into your virtual machine. It still will prompt them to log in, but because it could be viewed as a security issue, it gives you this little warning. And when we click on the OK button, there's the RDP file that the Azure Pack automatically generated for us based on the settings that we configured on VMM and our remote desktop gateway and whatnot. And when we open that up, you'll see that it's actually opening up a remote desktop connection. So it's launching our local remote desktop client, and it's providing a connection into the remote computer. You'll notice the remote computer here is actually the Hyper-V host that's running this VM. So it figured out which Hyper-V host in the environment is running the VM, and we're establishing the remote console connection to that Hyper-V host and then telling the Hyper-V host gateway across your virtual machine bus on that host to this VM's console. It also has the gateway server. So it added in the gateway server so that we know where we're proxying through from our outside internet connection. So I'm going to go ahead and click connect. There we go. We're now on that virtual machine's console through the Hyper-V host's VM bus, and we can interact with this. This was a Windows 8.1 developer VM that's running a development environment in this case. We can interact with this just from the console using our remote desktop client without having any direct network access into that virtual machine from the location that we're managing our environment from. Well, Andy, what do you think? Does that look pretty attractive from your standpoint?
Oh, yeah, it's attractive. I mean, you've just now also enabled remote troubleshooting of network connectivity. I mean, that was always the problem in the old days with remote desktop. Yeah, it was great, but what happens if the machine's dead in the water, right? Yep. This is really cool in that you can actually get to the console of the machine even though there's no configured network access for the virtual machine.
Definitely. No, it makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Well, great. Well, do you think it makes sense to, why don't we head back to our office? We'll finish up this episode and tell everyone what's in store in the next episode. Does that sound great?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, great. Well, I'll see you back at the office.
All right.
Well, Andy, today we've enhanced our Azure Pack environment to provide self-service remote console support for any of the VMs that a tenant is provisioning and managing, so that even if those tenants don't have direct network access to the VMs, or the VMs themselves don't have any network connectivity, as you had mentioned when we were in the lab, it gives people the ability to still consistently remotely connect to their console and be able to do some troubleshooting and configuration. If the virtual machine happens to be hung or something, they can reset it and whatnot. So it gives some nice capabilities from that standpoint.
Absolutely.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time and your input as we went through this configuration together.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Keith.
Definitely. And thank you, everyone, for joining us as well. Down at the bottom of the page where you're watching this video, you'll also see some additional resources that are available. You'll see my blog and Andy's blog, and also a step-by-step guide that you can use for configuring the remote console connection capabilities that you saw demonstrated today in your own Windows Azure Pack environment. And if you missed episode 9, before you try that, be sure to go back to episode 9 where we talked about building out the base Azure Pack environment as well. In addition, as you move forward in your career with virtualization and cloud technologies, we'd like to invite you to join us in helping you get certified as a Microsoft Virtualization Specialist on Windows Server 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2, Hyper-V and VMM and Azure Pack, all that good stuff. We have a great Early Experts program that you can access for free at earlyexperts.net that helps you study and prepare and have access to a community of mentors that can help answer your questions as you get ready for our Microsoft Specialist Certification Exam on Server Virtualization. In addition, over the next few months in April, May, and June, if you're an IT pro in the U.S., you've got some great opportunities to win some cool prizes. In addition to getting certified, you could also win a Surface 2 device, a Windows to Go USB key, or a certificate exam voucher. It's a free program. I encourage you to take advantage of it. Andy and I are both involved in helping to mentor and guide IT pros that are getting certified, and hope to see you all there in the Early Experts community as our next Early Expert. Well, thanks so much for joining today in episode 10. Stay tuned for future episodes of the Build Your Hybrid Cloud series, because in episode 11 and in 12, we'll be continuing to enhance our Azure Pack environment with PowerShell-based automation through our service management automation components, or SMA components, and showback and chargeback through the integration between Cloud Cruiser as a free Express add-on, and the Azure Pack as well. So we've got some great stuff coming up in the next couple episodes too. Hope to see you there. Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of your day.
Have a good one.